of my voice. I clear my throat and lower it several notches. It's you.
It's me,
he confirms. My eyes fill with tears. It's really him. I can't believe it. I didn't think you would pick up. I found this letter I wrote to myself saying that you were in jail.
There's a long silence on the other line. Tess, don't make me lie to you. I don't want to talk about myself. I want to help you, and today I'm going to do it, once and for all.
Okay.
So here's the thing.
He sounds almost breathless, like I caught him in the middle of something.
Every time I see you, you tell me you called your father, and he never returned the call. And I got to thinking how strange it was that in a whole month, he never once called back his only daughter. I mean, he wasn't the warmest person in the world, but he loved you. He would never ghost you for an entire month.
He's right. Lucy returned my call, but my father never did. So what are you saying?
I'm saying that's not your father's number.
I frown at the phone. I never memorized my father's phone number, but the voicemail had his voice on it.
Graham must have gotten a burner phone and recorded your father's voicemail message onto it, Harry explains. So when you leave the messages, he never gets them. But I found your dad, Tess.
He pauses.
He never got any of your messages, not a single one, and I'm driving to his house right now.
My dad.
Right, your father.
There's a loud honk on the other line.
When I tell him what's going on with you and that asshole Graham, he's going to want to get involved and help you. Your dad's a good guy, and he's family. No court is going to listen to me, but they'll listen to him. He's going to help you. I'm sure of it.
Oh, I say. It sounds almost too good to be true. Harry will tell my father what's going on in this house, and my father will intercede and come save me. I can go live with him in a house where the doors don't lock from the inside, where I don't have to write secret messages on my thigh to find the man I love. Like I said, it sounds too good to be true. Nothing can be that simple, can it?
Anyway, I'm almost there.
Another loud honk, and Harry swears under his breath.
I'll call you after I'm done talking to him, okay?
Don't hang up, I start to say, but my words get cut off by the blast of a loud horn, and a second later, the line is dead. I put down the phone, my stomach churning. This should be a good thing. My dad and I aren't close, but he loves me. If he thinks I'm in danger, he'll come to save me. I know he will. But somehow, I sense that Harry going to see my father is a horrible mistake. Chapter 41. Graham spends the entire morning up in his office, but he finally emerges when it's time for lunch. Camilla is making soup for lunch. I helped her out by chopping various root vegetables, but now everything is in the pot, and every couple of minutes, she stirs it, tastes the broth, and makes some sort of seasoning adjustment. The aroma of garlic, rosemary, and thyme fills the kitchen. It reminds me of when I was a kid, and I used to cook in the kitchen with my mother. She used to give me a few little tasks to do, so I could feel like I contributed in a useful way to the meal. She was a really skilled cook. As an adult, I was never a good cook, and I always felt like if she had lived longer, she could have taught me more of her secrets. I would have loved that. I always felt sad that she never got to meet Harry. She would have adored him, I'm sure of it.
It smells incredible in here,
Graham comments.
I could smell it all the way up the stairs.
Tess helped chop the vegetables, Camilla says. Graham is silent for a beat.
You gave her a knife?
I remember the moment of hesitation before Camilla handed me the blade I used to chop vegetables. The drawer with the knife was locked with a key. It was fine, Camilla says.
No, it's not fine. You shouldn't have given it to her.
I shift in my seat at the kitchen island. I'm capable of chopping a few vegetables, Graham. I'm not going to hurt myself. His lips part, and he looks like he's going to say something, but then he shakes his head.
We'll talk about this later.
Of course, I'm sure Camilla will be the one he talks to about it. He'll scold her for letting me help chop the vegetables, and she has to do what he says since he's the boss. Next time she makes soup, I'll just have to watch. Graham lingers in the kitchen while Camilla finishes cooking her lunch. I don't love the way he turns to watch Camilla at the stove, smiling appreciatively at the curve of her legs and her skin-tight jeans. Harry never used to leer at women that way. But when Graham notices me looking, he looks away. At least he's embarrassed about it.
So, what have you been up to all day?
Graham asks me as he sits down beside me at the kitchen island. I shrug. Not much. Just playing in the backyard with Ziggy a bit, that's all.
That's all?
There's an edge to his voice, like he doesn't quite believe me. That's all. I wonder if he knows I've been in contact with Harry today. He must suspect something. There was that letter, after all. He's studying my face, and I squirm under his gaze. I've got to change the subject. So, I say, how did we meet? Graham drums his fingers on the table, his eyes distant.
You were at the beach. Your scarf blew into the water, and I jumped into the ocean to rescue it for you.
Oh, like how Christine and Raoul first met in Phantom of the Opera. He snaps his head back, blinking at me.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
I used to love Phantom of the Opera, and we have a copy of it in our DVD collection, and I was watching it this morning, so... I stop talking, noticing the scowl on Graham's face. That was nice of you. Thank you for rescuing my scarf.
You're welcome.
I bite on the tip of my thumbnail. Why did I have a scarf at the beach anyway? He frowns.
Well, it wasn't a wool scarf. It was one of those silk things.
Oh. Graham rips his eyes away from mine and cranes his neck to look at the stove.
Camilla, is that soup almost ready? Don't make this your life's work.
Just a moment, Camilla calls out. I'm almost done. She shuts off the stove and retrieves two bowls from the cupboard. I watch as she carefully ladles the contents of the pot into the bowls. Little clouds of steam waft out of each bowl. My stomach growls at the smell. Let me help you. I jump out of my seat to join Camilla by the stove. What should I do? She nods at the bowl on the right. You take yours and I'll bring Graham his soup. I carry my bowl of piping hot soup to the table, being careful not to spill. Camilla does the same thing with Graham's bowl. I set mine gently on the table, and as Camilla does the same, her hand spasms. I watch in horror as the bowl tips over, right onto Graham's lap.
Jesus Christ!
He cries out. He jumps up from the table, revealing jeans soaked with steaming hot broth.
What the hell is wrong with you, Camilla?
She clasps a hand over her mouth. I'm so sorry. She grabs a paper towel to help him, but he shoves her away, hard enough to make her stumble. His face is bright pink.
That was boiling hot. You could have scalded me. I swear to God, Camilla, sometimes I think you're just as dumb as Tess.
Camilla clasps a hand to her chest and takes a step back. I apologize. It was an accident.
Yeah, whatever, he grumbles. I've got to go change.
He pushes past her and heads for the stairwell. I watch him sprint up the steps, feeling mortified by my husband's behavior. How did I end up marrying a man like that? I don't understand. And now it feels like I'm stuck with him forever, all because I got into a stupid car accident. Unless my father can help me. I hope Harry is successful. I'm so sorry he spoke to you that way, I say to Camilla. There's a crease between her eyebrows. Tess, did I ever tell you about my abuelita and about when she died? I shake my head. I don't know. If you did, I wouldn't remember, would I? No, she concedes. But I remember. I have no idea what she's talking about. I grab a stack of napkins off the kitchen counter. We should get all the soup cleaned up. Tess, she grabs my arm to stop me, her fingernails biting into my skin. Listen, I'm sorry Graham makes up those bullshit stories about the way the two of you met. The scarf story. I knew it was a fake. Oh, you don't deserve that. Camilla's eyes are on mine. You don't deserve any of his lies. You deserve the truth. Everyone deserves to know the truth. The truth? What is the truth? I can't even begin to grasp it. Even if I figure out how my life became this way, all my revelations have vanished by tomorrow. Maybe I discovered the truth last week, or the week before, and I've just forgotten it. And if I discover it today, I'll just forget it again. It's like I'm in some sort of repeating hell. Tess, Camilla's voice pulls me out of my thoughts. I have something for you. I realize she's holding out her hand, and in her palm is a small key. This opens the top drawer of the desk in Graham's office. She places the key down on the kitchen island in front of me. Everything you need to know is in there. Go now, quickly, while he's changing. My mouth falls open. It hits me that the spilled soup wasn't an accident at all. She did it on purpose so I would have a clear shot at Graham's office while he's changing. Camilla, go, she says. I'm sick of these lies. You deserve the truth. I pick up the key from the table. I close my fingers around it. I don't know what she's talking about. I don't know what is in his desk drawer. But she's right. I've been searching for the truth, and this woman has literally handed me the key to everything I've been wanting to know. I leave my bowl of soup behind and follow Graham's footsteps up the stairs. But instead of going to the bedroom where he's getting cleaned up and changed, I stop at the room before it. His office. The door is ajar. He had been working there before lunch and probably planned to come back. I tap it open, taking in the sight of his large bookcase, the leather love seat, and the mahogany desk. I close the door behind me. Graham's desk is in the corner of the room. There are several drawers, all closed. I try them, one by one. They're all filled with papers, probably related to the company. When I finally get to the top right drawer, it doesn't open. Then I notice it has a keyhole the same size as my little key. Before I can fit my key into the lock, my phone rings in my pocket. I pull it out. The number I dialed this morning is flashing on the screen. It's Harry. I don't have much time, but I take the call anyway.
Tess, he gasps. I just saw your father.
Hang on, there's something I need to tell you. I look down at the key in my sweaty hand. Harry, Camilla gave me the key to Graham's desk drawer. She said there's something in there I need to see, so I'm up in his office while he's changing.
Tess,
his voice is shaky and quiet.
Don't open that drawer.
What? Did I hear him correctly? You don't understand. Whatever he's been keeping from me, it's in this drawer. If he's been drugging me or... Look, I've got the key in my hand. I'm going to open it right now.
No, no. Look, can you just...
He sounds almost frantic now.
I'm driving over to your house right now. Can you wait? I'll be there in less than 10 minutes. Don't open the drawer.
In 10 minutes, he'll have figured out I'm in here. I hiss into the phone. This is my only chance. What's wrong with you?
Tess, please, I'm begging you. Just wait.
I let out a huff. Forget it, Harry. Before he can protest again, I hang up the phone. I sense now that this is what I've been waiting for. For weeks, maybe months, the answer to my questions. The truth, like Camilla said. Why is this happening to me? Why is Graham doing this to me? How do I get out of here? I'm going to get the answer, and this time I'm not going to forget it so easily. Never again. I fit the small key into the lock of the drawer on Graham's desk, but just before I can turn it, my hand trembles. I get a strange buzzing sensation in the back of my head, and all of a sudden, Graham's office fades away to white. Then gradually, another room comes into focus. It's like I've been transported to somewhere different, back down to the living room of my house. Graham is at the front door, talking to somebody. He's keeping his voice down, but the other person isn't. The other person is shouting. As I step closer, I recognize the voice of the person standing outside our front door. It's my father.
Let me in, Graham,
my father snaps at my husband.
This isn't right.
I'm afraid this is a bad time, Graham says in a maddeningly calm voice. Tess is resting.
Bullshit!
I've never heard my father swear before. It's shocking.
I can see her back there. Let me talk to her.
Douglas, you need to keep your voice down.
I can just barely see my father's face over Graham's shoulder through the crack in the open front door. His face is bright pink like he's furious.
I want to see my daughter. Right now.
I'm afraid not.
This isn't right.
My father's voice is hoarse now.
Tess deserves to hear the truth. You can't do this. You can't keep her prisoner here like this.
I'm Tess's husband and guardian, Graham says calmly. So I get to decide what I think is right for her. That's not your job.
Tess!
My name sounds like an anguished cry on my father's lips.
Tess, I need to talk to you!
I'm sorry, Douglas. I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
I open my mouth, wanting to yell out to my father that I'm here, that I want to talk to him, but no words come out. I feel frozen, paralyzed. My father is a stone's throw away, and there's nothing I can do. Graham is preparing to lock the door to our house, shutting me inside, and... The living room fades away to white again, and now I'm back in Graham's office. I look down and realize that I'm still gripping the key to the drawer in Graham's desk. My fingers are trembling and sweaty, but they still work. They don't even have to put the key in the lock. It's already in there. All I have to do is turn it. There's something in this drawer that I need to see. My father knows the truth, and Graham will do anything to keep him from telling me. And now, for reasons I can't understand, Harry didn't want me to look in the drawer. I can't even imagine why. Like Camilla said, I deserve to know the truth, once and for all. So I turn the key. Chapter 42. I don't know what I expected to find when I opened the drawer. Bottles of some hallucinogenic, a signed confession from Graham. None of that is in the drawer. What's in the drawer is paper, a huge stack of paper. And the first page has my name on it. I glance behind me. I'm still alone in Graham's office, so I pull the stack of papers out of the drawer and rest them on his desk. I turn the first page and I start to read. And I keep reading, page after page after page. Oh, God. Oh, no, I can't believe this. No wonder Harry didn't want me to open the drawer. No, 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 no.
Tess?
I was so absorbed in what I was reading that I didn't even see Graham enter the room. He's standing behind me in a clean shirt and slacks. His blue eyes behind his glasses look incredibly sad.
I never wanted you to read that, he says.
I drop into the leather chair in front of his desk because my knees can't support me anymore. I find myself gasping for air.
I'm so sorry, he says.
How? I croak. How did it happen? He exhales loudly.
It started over a year ago. Every morning when you woke up, you would complain about terrible headaches, always on the right side. I kept telling you to go to the doctor, but, well, you know how you are about doctors.
A corner of his mouth quirks up, even though there's nothing funny about what I just read.
The headaches kept getting worse, and then one day while you were driving, you crashed your car. The accident was minor, but it turns out it happened because you had a seizure while driving.
I cover my mouth, barely able to listen to this. But nothing he's telling me is a surprise after what I just read in the stacks of my medical records from Mount Sinai.
When they took you to the hospital after the accident, they found a large tumor in the right side of your brain, Graham says. They did surgery to try to remove it, but they couldn't get it all. The pathology came back saying it was a malignant tumor, stage 4, glioblastoma.
Those are the words written on every doctor's note in the stack. From neurosurgeons to neuro-oncologists to neurologists. Stage 4 cancer. Glioblastoma. Poor prognosis. Terminal.
They tried doing chemotherapy treatment for a short time, he goes on, even though I wish he would stop. But you hated it. You hated going to the doctor so often. You hated the side effects of the medication, and it wasn't working. So you decided to stop treatment.
And then a memory comes back to me, sitting in front of the desk of a doctor. The doctor has a white beard and a grave expression on his face.
There's nothing more we can do, Mrs. Thurman. I'm so sorry.
The realization that I was going to die, the same way my mother did. Graham takes off his glasses and rubs his eyes with his fingers.
I thought you might be at peace after we decided to stop the treatment, but you weren't. You were miserable. You woke up every day, acting like you were already dead. You couldn't stand the idea of wasting away like your mother did. We tried antidepressants, therapy, but nothing worked. You had so little time left, and it felt like you were going to spend that time wishing you were already dead.
So that's when your psychiatrist got the idea.
I lift my eyes. I already know what he's going to say. I almost remember it, but I want to hear him say it.
It was an injectable drug in a clinical trial to treat victims of trauma.
He slides his glasses back on his nose.
It affects recent short-term memory. The idea was that I would give you an injection every night, and you would forget your diagnosis, and you could be happy for the remaining time you had left.
He shakes his head.
And it worked really well. I mean, yes, there were gaps in your memory and you couldn't work anymore, but you couldn't work anymore anyway because of the tumor. You were happy again. We explained the scar on your head by telling you that you were in an accident, and generally, you enjoyed your days.
Distantly, I can hear the doorbell ringing on the first floor.
But then it all changed.
He lowers his voice.
I don't know if it was too much of the medication accumulating in your bloodstream, or maybe just the progression of the tumor. Your psychiatrist wasn't sure, but the gaps in your memory became worse. You would wake up, unable to remember most of the last decade. You couldn't even remember me anymore.
He takes a shaky breath.
Do you know what that's like? To wake up every morning next to a woman who has no idea who you are and accuses you of being an intruder in your own bed?
I don't know, I shoot back. Is it worse than finding out you're dying of terminal cancer? The doorbell rings again downstairs. Someone is pounding on the door. Graham hangs his head.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Tess. This is why I didn't want you to know. I kept hoping to make it work.
There are footsteps on the stairs. The footsteps grow louder, and a second later, an elderly man bursts into the study. I stare at the slightly hunched figure with the white hair and deep grooves in his cheeks. It takes me a second to place him. Dad, I whisper.
Princess,
he says. He looks so old. I hadn't seen him in a long time, even before my engagement to Harry, and it shocks me now that my father has become an old man. I wonder how many of the creases in his face are my fault. He aged 10 years in the months leading to my mother's death, and I bet in the last year he's aged another 10 years.
Are you okay?
The wrinkles on my father's forehead deepen.
Did Graham tell you?
Yes, I manage. He told me everything.
I thought you deserved to know the truth,
he says softly.
Your mom, as much as it hurt her to leave you, she always said how grateful she was for those last few months the three of us had together. I didn't want you to miss out on that.
He shoots Graham a hard look.
He disagreed.
You don't know what she was like,
Graham says through his teeth.
You didn't see how miserable it was making her.
A tear escapes my right eye and I swipe at it. I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe I'm dying, just like my mother was. My father sees the look on my face, and his Adam's apple bobs.
I'm so sorry, Princess.
It hits me that my father hasn't called me Princess since my mother passed. This is the first time I've heard him say that word. A lump forms in my throat, and then a second later the tears are flowing freely. I fall into my father's arms and sob on his shoulder.
Maybe Graham was right,
my father murmurs as he strokes my short hair.
You're not the same as your mother. I think maybe you're happier not knowing.
No, I pull away from his chest and wipe my eyes. I wanted to know. I'm glad I know. At that moment, a man with dark hair and a beard bursts into the study. His brown eyes widen at my swollen eyes and puffy red face. It takes me a second to realize who I'm looking at. It's Harry. And by the look on his face, I can tell he knows everything.
Camilla, let me in, he says.
Our eyes meet across the room.
You know,
Graham whirls around. He shoots Harry a dirty look.
What the hell are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be in jail?
Harry returns the dirty look.
They released me this morning.
He looks back at me.
Are you okay?
I squeeze my hands into fists. Did you know about any of this before?
No.
He looks as sick as I feel.
I thought you had been in a car accident, same as you did.
He glances at my father.
But then I talked to your dad, and he told me...
It all makes sense now. I don't remember doing it, but according to Harry, I called my father every day, and he never returned my calls.
because apparently I was never calling him in the first place. Graham was keeping me from reaching him so he wouldn't tell me I was dying. I look over at Graham, the man who engineered this daily deception for my own good. I still feel like I don't know who he is. I don't remember him. I don't remember falling in love with him. I don't remember marrying him. The drug he gave me took all of that from me. And I'm glad. I turn to my husband. How much time do I have left? He shakes his head.
Hard to say. The last time I took you to the doctor a month ago, he said 6 or 7 months.
My body goes cold. 6 months. 6 months left on this earth. If that's all I have, I'm damn well going to enjoy it. Graham, I say, thank you for running my business while I've been sick. You've done a good job, and I want you to keep doing it. Keep it going, please. He nods slowly, his brow wrinkled. But I don't want to live here with you anymore. I shake my head. I don't even know who you are. And I'm sorry, but I don't love you. This arrangement needs to end. Graham drops his eyes.
I love you, Tess. Maybe you don't remember me, but I remember you. I want you to be happy. I'll do whatever it takes.
I'm not happy here, and there's nothing you can do except let me leave. His eyes widen.
But where will you?
He stops mid-sentence and turns to look at Harry.
Oh.
I'm sorry, I say quietly. Graham looks down at his loafers. His chest rises and falls.
I just want you to be happy, Tess. So, whatever you need to do.
I thought he would put up more of a fight, but he isn't. He's letting me go. For a moment, I wonder if I've got it all wrong. Maybe Graham is the one. I married him, after all. He's the one I had planned to spend my life with, when I thought I had a whole life to spend. But then I look over at Harry, wringing his hands together. There was always only one person for me. I somehow got lost along the way, but having terminal cancer can show you what's important. Harry, I say, will you let me spend these 6 months with you? His eyes light up. Even though I've lost my memory, I know it's the first time I've felt happy in a very, very long time. Chapter 43. Graham and I come up with an arrangement. We're going to have a contract drawn up by a lawyer to make it all official, but we hashed out most of the details. Graham will keep the house. I don't want to stay in one place anymore anyway. Graham will make sure the restraining order against Harry is dropped, as well as the current charges against him from last night. Graham will remain CEO of my home spa and keep it running while I'm gone. As much as I loved it, I'm not capable of running it anymore. And that's not how I went to spend my last months. When I'm gone for good, the company will be his. Camilla will get a generous severance package. Ziggy will stay with me. As soon as I'm done packing, I will leave with Harry and never return. Graham is on his phone with his lawyer right now, eager to get the papers drawn up today. He says that his attorney can email him the documents and we can take care of it right away, although I feel like it can wait until tomorrow, now that tomorrow will exist. But I also feel like it will be good to get it done with. I want to leave this house and start living the rest of my life. Now that I know how little is left, I don't want to waste any time. While Graham is in his office, my father kisses me goodbye while Harry and I relocate to the kitchen. I get some coffee brewing, then we go sit at the kitchen island, waiting for it to be done. While we wait, Harry holds onto my hand like I'm his life preserver. Hey, I say, what's with the beard? He rubs the stubble on his chin.
Do you like it?
I can't decide. When did you decide to grow it?
Right after you contacted me.
He grins at me.
It's kind of my disguise.
I laugh. It's a good one. I almost didn't recognize you.
Yeah, I was considering an eye patch too, and a fake scar. But then I was like, maybe too much.
I prefer being able to see your face. He rubs the beard again.
I'll get rid of it then.
Just like that?
Sure, why not?
I raise my eyebrows. Is this what it's going to be like? Anything I ask, you're going to do it without question? He smiles at me, but a bob of his Adam's apple betrays his true feelings. Everyone else has had a long time to deal with the reality that I'm dying. Harry found out today, just like me. For a moment, it looks like he's fighting back tears. He wins the battle, and his eyes stay dry.
What can I say? I'm crazy about you. I always have been.
Always? He squeezes my hand.
I don't know if I ever told you this, because I thought you might find it weird, but the second I saw you at that computer store, I thought to myself, this is the woman I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. I'm glad I was right.
Well, I say, the rest of my life. And now it's my turn to be blinking back tears. I never wanted to end up like my mother. I never wanted to have that feeling like the end is in sight, at least not for another 40 or 50 years, when I'm old with a pile of grandchildren and maybe great-grandchildren. But that's not my fate. Yes, I'm back with the love of my life, but my time with him is limited. Just a few short months. The smell of freshly brewed coffee fills the kitchen. I glance at the stairwell and drum my fingers against the table. I wonder how long it will take to get that contract drawn up. The sadness vanishes from Harry's face and is replaced by a sneer.
I can't believe you're agreeing to this. I can't believe you're letting that asshole run your company.
I lift a shoulder. The company isn't what's important. I don't want to waste another second on it.
But Graham is not a good guy.
He was just trying to protect me, I remind him. He knew I couldn't handle my diagnosis back then. He wasn't doing anything to hurt me. He's been taking care of me all this time.
No, Harry shakes his head. I don't buy that. Graham doesn't have your best interests in mind. Do you really want him to get your company and everything you've worked so hard for?
I frown. If this is about the money, I can change my will to leave some of it to Dad and to you.
I don't want your money, Tess,
Harry bursts out. His face is pink.
Is that what you think? Jesus Christ.
I don't think he wants my money. But it's not like I have any children I need to make sure are taken care of. I want my dad to get something to have in his old age, but I don't care what happens to the rest of it. Maybe I'll donate it to charity. And I don't mind if Graham keeps running the company. It seems like he's doing a good job. This is what I want. I look into Harry's eyes so he knows I mean it. I don't want to fight with him about the company. I want to sign the papers and be done with it. He opens his mouth, but shuts it again at the sound of footsteps on the stairs. It must be Graham. That was quicker than I thought. We haven't even been down here an hour yet. Despite everything, I appreciate Graham is hurrying this process along. I just want to get out of here with Harry. Graham comes into the kitchen, brandishing a sheaf of papers in one hand and a ballpoint pen in the other. Harry's brown eyes darken at the sight of him, but all I feel is relief. This contract will let me sever ties with Graham. I won't have to deal with this stranger anymore, and my company will be taken care of.
I got it done as quickly as I could.
He places the stack of about a dozen pages on the kitchen island and slides them across to me.
Feel free to look through it, but everything we discussed is covered in here.
Thanks for getting it done fast, Graham, I murmur. The typewritten lines swim before my eyes. He places the ballpoint pen on top of the papers.
I know you don't have much time left.
The reminder stings. It's still all so fresh. I wonder how I'll feel about it tomorrow. It will get easier each day, I'm sure of that much. I don't want to go back to forgetting again. I've lost so much, and I don't want to lose my mind, too. I flip through the pages, skimming the legal jargon. On the last page, there's an X next to the line where I'm supposed to sign. I pick up the pen.
Aren't you going to get your own lawyer to look it over?
Harry speaks up. He shoots Graham an accusatory look.
You don't expect her to sign it right now, do you?
He shrugs.
You can bring it to a lawyer if you want, Tess, but it's going to take weeks to sort through it all if you want to make changes.
He pushes his glasses up the bridge of his nose.
I'm your husband. I've been taking care of you this last year. I'm not trying to cheat you. I wouldn't do that.
Harry lets out a loud snort.
You're so full of it, Graham. Tess, you need a lawyer to look at that.
I grip the pen so tightly, my fingers tingle. It looks okay to me. I just want this to be done with.
Tess,
I raise my eyes to meet Harry's. Please, If I sign this today, we can leave now. We can get on a plane tomorrow. Harry just shakes his head. Graham is right, I remind him. I don't have much time. A few weeks? That's a big chunk of what I have left. I need this to be done. Please understand. Harry's shoulders sag.
I'm just trying to look out for you.
I know, and I'm okay now, I add. Really? He looks miserable, but he nods.
Fine, Tess. Do what you need to do.
I start to scribble my name on the contract just as the doorbell goes off. At first, I assume it must be my father, having forgotten something at our house. But then I remember. Lucy was coming to visit. We were going to have a girls' afternoon at the mall. We were going to have a makeover. That was before I knew the truth. It's Lucy, I say. Maybe I'm imagining it, but Harry's eyes seem to darken again. Graham nods in understanding.
I'm sure you want to talk to her. Why don't you sign the contract and I'll give you some privacy so the two of you can chat.
But I'm not in the mood for Lucy. It's strange because she's my best friend, but she's not who I want to be around right now. In fact, the thought of seeing her gives me a foul taste in my mouth. I can't remember ever feeling anything but warmly toward Lucy, but now I feel a flash of anger. Lucy did something to me. Something bad. Did she do something to hurt me? Or has my tumor-ridden brain manufactured this memory? I abandon the contract on the kitchen island, and without another word, I sprint over to the door and fling it open. I hardly even notice that Graham has been following at my heels, or that he picked up the contract from the table and he's got it in his hands again. The woman standing at my front door is very recognizably my best friend. Harry looks older and scruffier and more tired than he did the last time I remember, but Lucy looks great, even better than my last memory of her. Her red hair is glossy and her figure is perfectly trim, like she's been working out. The only thing that isn't perfect about her are the light purple circles under her eyes. Tess, she squeezes her red purse in her fists. It's so good to see you. Are you okay? Graham's hand drops onto my shoulder. Harry hung behind in the kitchen, but Graham is hovering over me protectively.
She's okay. We had a long talk this morning. She knows about her diagnosis.
Oh, Lucy's face falls. Tess, I'm so sorry. It's fine. It's not true, but I hope it eventually will be. I'm fine. I appreciate you being there for me over the last year. You're a good friend. Lucy's eyebrows bunch together. Graham gives her a look.
Lucy works at the company, too, Graham says in a strangely slow voice. She's a big part of the company. When you're traveling with Harry, she's going to be helping me out a lot to run the company. I'll probably have to promote her.
Lucy and Graham running my company. Huh. She never even thought the company would get off the ground. She warned me about starting it. The whole thing makes me sick to my stomach, but I don't want to think about it. Tess, Lucy says. I'm okay, I say for what feels like the 100th time. I promise, I'm fine. Lucy is still squeezing her purse for dear life, her fingers digging into the expensive material. I watch as her eyes fill with tears. Tess.
Lucy, Graham says firmly. Don't you think it would be better for Tess to be with family right now? Maybe you should go, and the two of you can talk another time. And later we can discuss what your role in the company is going to be.
Lucy bows her head. Okay. She starts to turn around. Graham has his hand on the door, ready to close it behind her. But then, quick as lightning, Lucy's hand shoots out, stopping the door before it can swing closed. I can't do this, Tess, she says.
Lucy? Graham growls.
Graham was stealing from you. Her chest heaves with a confession. That's what you told me before you got sick. You said he was filtering money into foreign accounts, and you were going to confront him and kick him out. But then the next day, I heard you had a seizure while you were driving, and then they found the tumor and—
Lucy,
Graham says sharply. Lucy's eyes fill with tears. When you got sick, you forgave him. And after you started getting those shots, you also forgot everything he did to you. But you deserve to know what he did before you make any decisions about the company. She pauses. I want you to know. I stare at her, stunned by the revelation. Graham was stealing from me. He was embezzling money from my company.
You're out of your mind, Lucy.
Graham's blue eyes are bulging out of their sockets.
I would never do that to Tess. Why would you lie like that?
Lucy ignores him and turns her gaze on me. He gave me a job at the company so I wouldn't say anything to you. She drops her eyes. I'm so sorry. You're my best friend. I'll never forgive myself. I turn away from her, my head pounding. Harry has come out of the kitchen and is standing behind me. He looks as stunned as I feel. He never trusted Graham, but he didn't know about this.
You asshole!
Harry's right hand balls into a fist.
What have you done to her? Go to hell.
Graham lifts his chin, folding his arms across his chest.
You act so goddamn self-righteous, but you don't know what this last year was like. Every morning, Tess wakes up and she doesn't know what the hell is going on. She wakes me up screaming. I've been taking care of her, doing everything for her like she's a child. Before that, I took her to every goddamn doctor's appointment. I was there through chemotherapy treatment. I cleaned up the vomit. I deserve the company after what I've been through.
Now Graham turns to me. He reaches out for my hand, but I wrench it away.
Tess, you know what I've done for you. You wouldn't even be alive right now if not for me. And I kept your secret because I know how much it scared you to end up like your mother.
I blink at him. Of all the things he's said, this is the only one that gets through. He knows my biggest fear, and he did try to help me.
This is bullshit, Harry spits at him. She's not going to give you her company after what you've done, right, Tess?
I open my mouth to answer him, but my throat is too dry to get any words out. Maybe it's a side effect of the medication. Harry and Lucy are both watching me with equally worried expressions on their faces.
I'll take care of your company, Tess, Graham pleads with me. Just sign those papers and I'll keep it going for you. And then you can do whatever you want with your boyfriend here for the last few months of your life. You don't ever have to hear from me again.
There's a mildly threatening edge to his voice as he adds,
You don't want to drag this out in court, do you?
He knows I don't want that. I don't want to spend my remaining time fighting this man. If I sign the papers now, it will be done.
You don't ever have to hear from me again.
Graham holds out the papers to me. I could sign those papers. I don't want to give him my company, but I also don't want to spend the last months of my life fighting him, and I can tell from the look in his eyes that he will fight me until I'm dead. What's the difference if he gets the company? I won't be around to see it anyway.
Don't do this, Tess, Harry says.
I take the contract from Graham's hand. It's still open to the page that has the X waiting for my signature. He holds out the pen, and I take it from him.
You're doing the right thing, Graham says.
I know I am, I say. I take the contract, and I rip it in half. I let the pieces flutter to the floor. Chapter 44. 1 week later. Harry is helping me pack. I don't recognize most of the stuff in the closet. It's all designer outfits that don't feel like me. My inclination is to leave it all behind. We've got plenty of money in my bank account. I can buy clothing and anything I need when we arrive at our destination. We're leaving tomorrow morning. I can't wait.
You should bring a few things, Harry points out. I mean, you don't want to wake up tomorrow and have nothing to wear.
I don't care if I wake up tomorrow and have nothing to wear, as long as I remember yesterday. This morning, when I woke up next to Harry, I could still remember the day before. And the day before that. My memories are still patchy, but they're all coming back to me, little by little, like a jigsaw puzzle falling into place. I'm not worried, I say. I rifle through the top drawer of my dresser. I toss that cracked photograph of me and Graham on our wedding day into the garbage a week ago. I never want to look at his smug face again. Of course, it's unlikely I'll get my wish. Graham might not be inheriting my company, but I will definitely see him again since I'm pressing charges against him for embezzlement. He's out on bail right now. And obviously, I have filed for divorce. All of this means we may have to cut our trip short. But that's okay. It's worth it to make sure he gets what he deserves. In the meantime, Harry and I are going to enjoy ourselves. Tomorrow morning, we're hopping on a plane to someplace warm, with lots of beaches. Harry grins at me and holds up a flowered bikini top to his chest.
This one is great.
I return the grin. That would look so sexy on you.
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
I yank the bikini top away from him and he grabs my hand. He pulls me closer until his lips press against mine. For the last week, we haven't been able to keep our hands off each other. We are making up for lost time. I cling to him, feeling the heat of his body, not wanting to let go, even to finish packing. When the memory of catching Lucy with Harry came back to me, Lucy confessed Graham had put her up to it. There was no affair. Harry never came on to her. It was all staged, so I would break off my engagement with Harry and Graham would have a shot with me. I will never forgive Lucy for that one. But she's trying. She's even going to be testifying against Graham, and she's offered to look after Ziggy for a few weeks until I get back from my trip with Harry. All those years, I was with the wrong guy. I was with a man who lied and cheated and stole from me. I'm so stupid. How could I have believed Harry would ever cheat on me? He has been nothing but devoted. So much wasted time. I'm filled with regret. It makes me even more determined not to waste another moment of the time I have left. When our lips finally separate, I'm almost floating. But then out of nowhere, a wave of sadness hits me. Despite the antidepressant pills I started taking again, it's been difficult to accept my situation. I'm not going to have the happy ending I dreamed of. It's off the table for me. You know, I say, I saw what happened to my mother. I might have 6 months left, but it doesn't mean those 6 months are all going to be good. The smile drops off Harry's face.
Look, you know I think we should try to get another opinion. Maybe there's a doctor who could—
No, I give him a sharp look. I don't want that. If I only have 6 months left, I want to enjoy the 6 months. I don't want to spend it getting chemotherapy. I don't want to spend it throwing up with my hair falling out. And I definitely don't want to spend it in the hospital with needles sticking out of my arm. I want to enjoy it on a beach with the love of my life, sipping margaritas, as long as I can.
It's your decision, Tess, Harry says quietly. Whatever you want, I'll support you.
Right, but I shake my head. You need to know what's coming. The end, it could get bad.
I know.
Really bad.
I know. And I'll be there.
I don't think you really know. Harry grabs my shoulders and looks me straight in the eyes.
I never thought I was going to get you back. Whatever happens from now on, I'm going to be there. I'm going to make the time we have together the best time of your life, no matter what.
He kisses me again. At this moment, I don't feel like I'm dying. I feel happy. I'm so glad I get to spend this time with him. I'm so glad I found him a month ago. When he pulls away, I trace my finger along the curve of his collarbone. I wonder why I did it.
Did what?
Why I found you. I raise my eyes to meet his. After all that time, why did I suddenly start looking for you a month ago? A lot of my memories have come back to me, but not that one. There was a reason I started looking for him. I had been living this way for over a year, but all of a sudden, one day, I decided to find Harry. Why? The memory is there, just beneath the surface. Sometimes I almost feel like I could catch it, but then it escapes me.
Does it matter?
He asks.
We found each other again. That asshole Graham is out of your life. That's all that's important.
He's right, of course, but it still bothers me. There must have been a reason I tried to find Harry. It's there, buried somewhere in the recesses of my tumor-ridden brain. Will I ever remember? I don't know. As I get sicker, the memories may fade altogether. I lean against Harry's shoulder, sinking into his warm body. And all of a sudden, I get a flashback. A memory of sitting next to Graham in a doctor's office. It feels so real, from the smell of antiseptic to the doctor's royal blue tie. I sense this is an important memory, and I squeeze my eyes shut, trying to capture it. But I can't. It lingers there, just below the surface. But I'll remember it eventually. I know I will. Epilogue. 1 month earlier. I can't believe what I'm hearing. This can't be right. Are you serious? I ask. Dr. Wang nods. He is a middle-aged Asian man with white threading through his black hair, wearing a royal blue tie. I just met him today. No, actually, I've met him many times before. He's my neuro-oncologist, a doctor who deals with brain cancer. But considering I woke up this morning unable to remember much of the last several years, it feels like I just met him today.
I'm very serious, Mrs. Thurman. He folds his arms in front of him. The MRI of your brain not only showed no growth of the tumor, but the tumor burden was significantly reduced following the chemotherapy. We thought you weren't responding, but apparently we were wrong.
Graham told me my diagnosis this morning. It was hard to hear. He said he only told me because we had to go to this appointment together, but after today, I wouldn't have to remember ever again. And then we hear this. I look over at Graham, who is sitting in his chair beside me. His jaw looks like it's about to become unhinged.
How can that be? He asks. You said this was terminal. You told me when we got the diagnosis that she had a year to live.
Dr. Wang spreads his hands apart.
We were wrong. She's had a remarkable response to the chemotherapy.
My head is buzzing. I reach out to touch the scar on the right side of my scalp, my souvenir. So, what does this mean? I ask.
It means, Dr. Wang says, your cancer is currently in remission.
Everything he says after that is a blur. He's going to have the pathologist review the slides to see if they overcalled my diagnosis. Maybe I was never stage four after all. If that's true, I could have a major lawsuit on my hands. But I don't care about any of that. I only care about one thing. I'm not dying. I'm okay. I can finally get my life back. We had already given Camila the evening off, so I cooked dinner tonight. Nothing too fancy, just some spaghetti with tomato sauce. But while I've got it on the stove, Graham comes down to the kitchen and frets over me. He looks down at the burner and frowns.
Are you sure it's safe for you to do that?
He asks. I stick out my tongue at him. I can handle boiling some pasta, Graham. But he still looks worried.
I better stick around.
I keep the spaghetti in the boiling water for 10 minutes. As I stir it with a spoon, I hum softly to myself. I can't believe what Dr. Wang told me today. I'm not dying. It's like I've been given a gift. Maybe I should take a cooking class. I've always wanted to become a better cook. There would have been no point if I only had 6 months left to live, but now, the options are mind-blowing. I could do anything. Except for some reason, all I can think about is Harry Finch, even though he's long gone from my life. It somehow doesn't feel that way. Now that I've got a new lease on life, he's the one I want to spend it with. But that's crazy. I haven't seen Harry in years. He's almost certainly moved on. After 10 minutes, I remove a single strand of spaghetti from the water. I throw it against the wall to see if it sticks. That's a trick my mother taught me before she got sick. I'm going to use her spaghetti trick, but I'm not going to end up like her after all. Thank God. 2 plates of spaghetti coming right up, I announce. Graham smiles at me.
It looks delicious. I'll get us drinks.
I douse the spaghetti in a healthy amount of red sauce with big clumps of tomato. Okay, I'm not exactly Julia Child, but there's time to learn. There's time for everything now. I bring the 2 plates of food out to the dining table. Graham follows a minute later with 2 glasses of water. After the doctor's appointment, he's changed into jeans and a t-shirt, and I can't help but think that my husband is pretty attractive. I can see why I might have fallen in love with him, even though I can't technically remember it. And now we get to spend the rest of our lives together like a real couple. I can make up for all the time he had to spend taking care of me and dealing with my business. How about candles? I suggest. Graham laughs.
Wow, you are in a really good mood.
But he indulges me by getting out a pair of candlesticks from one of the drawers. We light them and then dim the overhead chandelier in the dining room. I love the atmosphere and the way Graham's handsome face looks flickering in the candlelight. So what do you think of the spaghetti? I ask him. He twirls a few strands around on his fork and pops them in his mouth.
Delicious, like in a restaurant.
I giggle. It's a sound I haven't made in a long time.
I was thinking maybe I could take some cooking lessons.
Sounds good. I approve.
I take a gulp of my water, then stuff more spaghetti in my mouth. I don't know what it is, but this is the best meal I've had in years. Graham looks across the table at me, an unreadable expression on his face.
Maybe we should do some traveling now, I say.
He twirls more spaghetti around his fork.
It would be hard to get away. You know, my home spa is very busy right now.
Right. You're probably overwhelmed. I take another gulp of water. I should probably think about coming back. Graham puts down his fork, which is packed with spaghetti.
What? Why would you do that?
I snort. Well, it's my company.
Yeah, but...
The candles flicker.
You still have a lot of memory problems. I don't think it's a great idea for you to come back. You don't want to screw up the business.
I raise my eyebrows. Excuse me? But it's my business. I clear my throat and take another sip of water. Anyway, I'm not saying I'll come back today or tomorrow, but maybe in a month or two.
Maybe.
I peer at Graham over the rim of my water glass. I don't know why he's acting so weird about this. Why can't I come back to work? I'm capable of it. Look at what a great job I did on the spaghetti. Okay, running a big business is a little different from cooking a plate of spaghetti. And to be fair, the spaghetti is a little more al dente than I would have liked. But still. Anyway, I say, we can talk about when I'm coming back some other time. Let's just enjoy the meal.
Right, sure.
Except I notice Graham isn't eating his spaghetti anymore. He's just watching me across the table. It's making me uneasy. But I keep eating. If he doesn't want his food, that's his loss. He can go to bed hungry if he wants. By the time I finish my food, Graham has barely touched his. I glance pointedly at his plate. Are you done?
Looks like it, he mutters.
I get up out of my seat and start gathering up the plates to bring to the kitchen. But before I can do it, a wave of dizziness washes over me. It's so bad that I sink back down into my seat.
Tess?
Graham raises his eyebrows.
Are you okay?
I wait for the dizziness to pass. What was that? I haven't felt like that all day. And it's not like the tumor is getting worse. Dr. Wang just told me I was getting better. So why do I feel so awful? I look down at the glass in front of me that held my water. At the bottom of the glass, there are little remnants of white powder. Graham, I breathe. What did you do? He shakes his head slowly.
Things were perfect the way they were. You've been the perfect wife since you've been sick. You stay home all day and you let me manage the business. I don't know why you want to ruin all that.
Because I'm better. My tongue feels heavy and my words are slurring. I'm not sick anymore. I want things to go back to the way they were before my diagnosis. Graham grits his teeth.
You mean when you told me you were going to leave me? That you were cutting me out of the business?
I flinch. I don't remember that.
Of course you don't.
Graham's eyes appear to glow in the light of the candle.
And you never will.
The dizziness is being replaced by fatigue. I feel so tired I can barely keep my eyes open. But I have to. I can't lose consciousness. Because if I go to sleep, that's it. Graham will inject me with that medication the psychiatrist gave him, and I'll forget everything that happened today. Yes, I won't remember my cancer diagnosis, but I also won't remember I'm in remission. Only Graham will know the truth, and he'll do anything to keep me from finding out. I use every ounce of strength to get out of my chair. I want to run for the door, but then I remember it locks from the inside. I won't be able to leave the house. Ziggy is barking up a storm outside the back door. If only he could understand what was going on. Maybe he could help me, but I'm not sure anyone can help me at this point.
Tess, Graham's voice is gentle. Just relax. Look, this isn't so bad. You've been happy until now.
Go to hell, I spit at him. I nearly trip over my feet as I stumble in the direction of the bathroom. There's no lock on the door, but I close it behind me and lean all my weight against it. Of course, as soon as I pass out, Graham will easily be able to get inside.
Tess,
his voice floats under the door.
Let me in, Tess. Come on. This will be so much easier if you cooperate.
I search the room for a weapon. There's got to be something in here. A razor, some scissors, even a goddamn tweezer would be great. But there's nothing. The only thing I see is a tube of dark red lipstick. And what the hell am I supposed to do with lipstick? And then it hits me. Graham bangs on the door.
Come on, let me in. You can't keep me out of there forever. In about 5 minutes, you're going to be sound asleep anyway.
That means I have 5 minutes to do this. I pull down my jeans and let them hang around my knees. Then I grab the tube of lipstick. I pull off the cap, and with my shaking hand, I write the words on my thigh as legibly as I can possibly manage. There's only one person I can think of who will move heaven and earth to help me. I hope to God that I see this message in the morning. Find Harry. This is the end of Do You Remember, a Podium Audio production. If you enjoyed this audiobook, we would love for you to rate and review it. For more psychological thrillers, check us out at podiumaudio.com and sign up for our newsletter. We promise we won't spam you. Also, consider joining our community of listeners, fans, and trolls on social media. We're active on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit. We'd love to connect. You have been listening to Do You Remember? Produced by Mitch Rains. Written by Frieda McFadden. Performed by Terry Schnaubelt, a member of SAG-AFTRA. Text copyright 2022 by Frieda McFadden. Production copyright 2022 by Podium Audio, all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.